Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You never know what's going to happen, but, you know, I'm all about, you know, scoring goals and trying to make assists, so...
And break Wayne Rooney's record?
Hopefully. I've actually spoken to Wazza about it, and, you know...
You're coming for him?
No, he wants me to do it.
They always say that, strikers.
When I look back, it's just like 6 or 7 months wasted. I wish I would have spoken to someone before the operation. Yeah. Do you know what was the saddest thing? Just before the pandemic, I bumped into an old school friend and he was homeless.
No, oh, that sums up my career. Did it take away any of your love for playing for England? We've come to Portugal to see Manchester United and England's Marcus Rashford to talk to him about his career, the ups, the downs, his family, the charitable work and the work that he did during the pandemic. And he's taking part in a pre-season. Yeah, the pre-season before the pre-season. So we're here at the campus in Portugal. Just tell us a little bit about what you do in this sort of pre-season period.
Yeah, for me, it's just about getting back up to speed, you know, before I want to go back into pre-season. A lot of it is obviously to do with the physical aspects, but also just when I go back into pre-season, I enjoy everyone, like being back together again, because we've been away from each other for a while. I don't want to go back into pre-season and be dying every day.
So, like I used to.
No, it's good to get... I usually do it every year, to be fair, just get back into shape.
Have you done it every year? Because last year, I remember sort of there being a big thing about you doing this sort of, like, 10-day camp. And after you came back last year and you looked unbelievable, you were so... You're strong, you're fit, you look like you sort of gained another yard. What have you done in this last sort of 12 months that sort of made that sort of difference physically?
I think last year I had a bit more time off, so I could do a double the training camp really. So I'd done probably 2 weeks in total.
Yeah.
10 days of ball work and running and gym, but 4 days before of just getting back up to speed. So I really had the time to just do everything that I needed to tick off, and I felt really well-rounded going into pre-season, so like I said, I wanted to be in that position this season as well, so it's important for me to come out and get the work in.
Do you not just feel like, you play that many games, you know, the internationals, the World Cup obviously last Christmas, all the United games, United in every competition to the end this season, do you not feel like just saying, right, actually I just need that break?
Yeah, that's probably, I've done a slightly shorter camp this time. I've only done 8 days.
Eight days of continuous training? Or?
Yeah.
What's Erik ten Hag's pre-season like last season compared to, say, the managers that you've had previously?
Erik's is one of the toughest, I'd say.
What, physically, running-wise? Or
running-wise, yeah, but also just we do a lot of, like, passing drills, and it's a lot of mental concentration, and when you're tired, you know, it's difficult to concentrate, you know, for long periods of time when you're already physically tired.
So it's like running with the, obviously, during the actual ball?
Yeah, we usually do it in between. So we'll do a technical, I don't know, 20... 30-minute session, and then we'll go into maybe 8 or 10 blocks of box to boxes or like shorter intensity runs, and then we'll go back into technical.
Yeah.
So it's not actually a tough session, but when you do it in the heat of the places that we train, then it's proper challenging. And I enjoyed it. Like I said, I turned up to pre-season in good shape, so I was just enjoying, you know, the new coach and getting used to him.
When I was back at United, it started to be introduced that players would have their own individual programmes and they'd have sometimes their own individual coaches. Have you got a team around you that sort of work with you separately from also the club's coaching staff as well?
Yeah, 100%. But I've had that from a really young age. Once I signed my first professional contract, I wanted to...
Was it 17 or 16?
Yeah, 17. But I didn't... You're still in college, you don't really need the money that they're giving you. So I thought, I had a conversation with my brother, and I think it's important to invest it in yourself and, you know, do what you can do to better yourself. So I got myself a psychologist and a strength and conditioning coach from 17 and just stayed with them throughout, really.
Are they still with you now, just to have that team around you, that tight team?
Yeah, because I don't like to chop and change. Like, I feel like they know me from when I was younger and, you know, before everything happened with United, like the success and stuff like that, they know me from before that, so I feel comfortable around them.
It blows my mind, that, because I used to think, like, tennis player or a golfer or, like, an individual athlete would have their team around them. Then if you're in a team sport, you'd all do the collective together and you'd all work together.
I think sometimes it gets neglected when you're in a team sport, but you have to remember, in a team sport, if every individual's at the top of the game or the best that they can be, as a team, you're going to be better. So it's obviously important to do stuff as a team, because it's, you need to win together and fight for each other. But at the same time, especially in the forward positions, I feel like you have to be able to bring something different to the table. So yeah, I've always just had that team around me, and I feel like it's been beneficial to me, so I probably won't change.
I came out of football 12 years ago as a player, but 5-6 years ago as a coach. It feels to me like it's gone to another level. The sort of this type of camp, you know, there's not just you here, there's other players as well. Just practicing and literally perfecting everything rather than just taking your rest.
Yeah, I just think that the level's so high in the league. If I don't do these things, maybe you start the season and you don't feel like you're up to scratch. And, you know, I don't want to be in that position. I don't think it's a nice position to be in. You know, you've probably played in games yourself where the other team's been that much better than you, and you're just a step behind everything.
Yeah. What would you say is the one thing that you'd like to add to your sort of, you know, the physicality element? Because you look absolutely spot on. You've got no body fat on you. You're lightning quick. You're strong. You know, what is it, just maintaining what you've got? Is there something that you think you'd like to add to your game that would make you a lot better?
I think there's always elements. I think it's always important to work on your strengths. I never stop working on my strengths. And, you know, you want to get your weaknesses as good as they can get, but, you know, your weaknesses are more often than not always going to be a little bit behind your strength. So mine's left foot, heading. I always want to work on them. And
your heading's, like, getting your heading's getting better, though, eh?
Yeah, but I still feel like I should score more because I outjump most people. So I feel like if I'm in the position, in the right areas in the box, then I should be getting, you know, 7 to 10 head of the season. So I still feel like I can do that, and I'll be pushing to do that next season.
And what about the left foot in terms of that side of things? You have a finishing coach. Do you work on that side of it a lot?
Yeah, for me, with my left foot, it's just about confidence, you know. Like, I feel like when I'm confident, I score with it.
Because you're on that left side a lot, aren't you, going down that left channel?
Yeah. When I'm not confident, it just never goes right with my left foot.
Yeah. When you're not confident in terms of your overall game or just... Yeah.
Yeah. But if I'm feeling confident and I'm feeling, you know, strong and fit and healthy, I feel like if I get an opportunity on my left, I've got a good chance of scoring, as long as, like I said, as long as I'm in the right areas. Yeah. So a lot of it is about just getting into the right areas, because my striker coach, he was a forward, so he always gives me information on getting in across the front post or, you know, on the shoulder of defenders and stuff like that. But it's good for me to know that, because even when I'm wide, it helps me understand what my forward would be thinking and where I need to deliver the ball or try and, you know, get assists from that aspect. And if I am making the box, I know where I need to be, so.
How much do you analyse your game after, let's say a game's finished on a Saturday, how much do you analyse sort of your performance after that game, or do you move on to the next because the next one's coming so quickly?
Yeah, I think when you've got 3 games a week, I analyse it, but maybe not as much.
Yeah.
Probably the day after a game. If I've got a week between, I'll recover the day after a game and then do it on the Monday.
The Monday, yeah.
But I think it's important, because a lot of my game is just being in the right positions at the right time. Yeah. I think sometimes wingers neglect it now. But for me, it's... Because I can always see the forward. The forward can't see me, so I have to go off his movements. But at the same time, whichever defender's marking me, I have to make it a tough day for him and, you know, try and get blindside of him, make sure he can't see me. When he gets square, try and get across him in them moments. But because I've been, you know, working on it for so long, it is becoming like second nature now, and I find myself looking for them things without really telling myself to do it. So that's good, but, you know, you have to keep working on it to keep improving.
Marcus, I'm going to get absolutely shamed here. I'm going to have a game of head tennis. First to 5?
Yeah.
This could absolutely destroy your career if I beat you here. You realise that, don't you? Here we go. Oh, here you go, my
short,
serve.
It's short.
Is that 1-0? Don't control it. Get back there. Hey! You better shape up. Oh, it's out. Getting carried away. 2-1. Oh, no. It was never going to work, that. Oh, no. Oh, how bad's that? Yes. Oh! 3-all.
It's done well.
Get over there. Oh, he's done it. Oh, no. Oh, no.
4-3.
I'm not doing bad, but I think he's been kind to me. Oh, fuck. He broke my ankle twice. Oh, oh.
Oh, it's out. Pause. Match point.
No.
Oh, no way, he's done that.
No, it's been just like, oh, no. Oh, no. That sums up my career. It was better that you won. Well done.
We planned for 4 or 5 scenarios before everything started.
They're tough, aren't they? Like, yeah, you think about how tough she must have been.
She's the toughest out of all of us.
So, Marcus, we're just on the way down to the beach, but on the way, I just thought I'd ask you a little bit about your early years and growing up in Manchester, and particularly playing for Fletcher Moss, which is a famous young local club. How was that for you?
I enjoyed it. I felt like it was the... Like, both my brothers played for Fletcher Moss, so that was, like, the local team to go to, and plus it had a good resume of people moving on to academies, which you know, was the ultimate aim. But, yeah... Like at home, the thing was to have fun. We had discipline, obviously, because my mum was a single parent, so when she went out, it was up to my brother and my older sister to like manage the household, so there was a high amount of discipline, but it was always fun. Like, I enjoyed my upbringing.
Talk to me about your mum. I mean, she must be a special person.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I only realised how tough it was for her when I moved out the house, and I realised how, like, when I went into digs, I realised how life was on, it was only 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
But how life was, and like over there, it was completely different to what I was used to, and it actually made me feel a bit uncomfortable at first.
In what way?
Just like where I come from is noise all the time, so after a certain amount of time, like, you get used to sleeping when there's noise, and then I remember the first night I couldn't sleep.
Noises in what, like cars or
just everything?
People shouting, or
police, people. Like, I live facing shops as well, so
right.
There was one takeaway shop that didn't close till 4 or 5 in the morning. So yeah, there was always some type of noise. And when I moved to Sale, there was just no. It was just silent. You could just hear the wind. That was it, and I couldn't sleep like the first couple of nights. But after like the first. Maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I started to settle down, and I was lucky really because the family that I got put with, great people, and you know, I still stay in contact with them now, and yeah, they're definitely a huge part of my upbringing, because I feel like that transition was difficult for some people in my age group when they had to leave home, so you know, I got lucky really.
There's a quote I read of your mum's where she said there were times where she used to be able to put only food on the table for yourselves and actually not have any herself. I mean, that's...
Yeah, but you just, at the time, you'd never know, because she'd always just have a smile.
Get on with it.
Yeah.
They're tough, aren't they? Like, you think about how tough she must have been.
She's the toughest out of all of us. She is, she still is now. Like, nothing can break her.
And your brothers obviously work with you, don't they? Your mum works. Just tell us a little bit about what they do for you now in terms of your professional life away from football.
Obviously, both my brothers are my agents, and my mum, I'm trying to get her to just relax a little bit. I want her to enjoy herself, but she's a workaholic. So in the beginning, she was doing like some of my commercial stuff with Nike alongside my brothers. But now at the minute, we've managed to wind her down a little bit. She's in control of like fan mail, and she enjoys doing it though.
But how much fan mail do you get a week?
Her house is piling up. She doesn't miss one though.
No,
she don't.
Replies to every single one.
Yeah, which is good. Like, I enjoy doing it, but after a long day of training, she runs around to my house with
500 shirts to sign, it's not good. To pretend like I'm sleeping.
Tomorrow, Mum, tomorrow. Thinking about you growing up and your mum really fighting hard to have to put food on people's table, did that inform what happened later in your life, where obviously you just did the most amazing thing during the pandemic with the free school meals?
Do you know what? I think we've always, even though we were struggling ourselves, we've always give back. I remember a couple of times on New Year's at the Cliff, we used to get the bus into town. So we used to pass loads of homeless people, and my mum literally would give me the last couple of quid in her purse to give to a homeless person even back then. So I feel like it's everyone in... Like my mum does her own things, my sisters do their own things, my brothers do their own things. And then we came together and made this idea. And yeah, it's something that we all... It's important to all of us, and it's close to home, you know. Do you know what was the saddest thing? Just before the pandemic, I bumped into an old school friend and he was homeless. And he just... I remember him at school, and he was one of the ones where his parents was in better position
than yours.
Yeah, than most of us, like.
Yeah.
And then to see him there, like, it was a bit of a shocking moment. Like, it pushed me back a little bit, and I just thought, like, definitely we were going to try and do something to, you know, not change just his life, but everyone's lives that are in difficult situations. And, like, it's a long process. We're still early on in the process, but I'm just pleased that it's up and running now, because it, step by step, it takes more care of itself, and the public have shown that they care. And I feel like more people have made a difference now and made a change to people's lives.
Do you recognise how big and important it was, that what you did? I mean, you overturned government policy. It was unbelievable, the impact you had. I mean, I've got a university which has got about 700 or 800 students. And if I asked them on a vote who their most popular person would be in Greater Manchester, they'd say you, 100%. I just know that for a fact. Do you have any idea of what you achieved? You overturned government policy.
Yeah, that's the thing that I didn't really concentrate on, like, the government U-turn. That wasn't at the forefront of my mind. Like, I knew that we might have had to do that from when Boris made the decision to go public with what he said after we spoke to him. I knew that was the next thing that we had to change. But it actually pushed me towards the public a bit more, and we needed them as support, and they was learning more about the topic, as I was learning about the topic as well, because the numbers are more crazy than what you could ever imagine, and especially in Greater Manchester. So it was more about helping the individuals that needed the help than it was ever about... I wish that the U-turn never had to actually happen. I wish we just managed to get it done straight away, because at the end of the day, we lost a little bit of time, which, you know, time is important, and a lot of things can happen in a short space at all.
Well, I always think about football players and think of... they get criticised when they don't plan for the end of their career. But you have definitely seen that you've got need to have your head screwed on and you're smart. Where's that come from, that sort of business sort of, like, mentality that you have?
I think it started with my mum. My mum's, like, very business-minded, and she always has been. She just hasn't been in the position to have the opportunities to, you know, do what she really wanted to do. But she's always had that mindset, and then, you know, it just gets passed down. Like, both my brothers are the same, and my sisters, when they want to be, are the same as well.
Yeah. I find that quite sad, because your mum obviously was struggling to put food on your table, but she'd just been given a chance and someone had invested in her.
Yeah.
Obviously, she could have, you know what I mean?
Yeah, she definitely could have. Like, my mum started doing properties when I was 18, and she'd done it all.
What, managed all your property purchases and everything?
She still does, most of them. But, like, she just always knew.
Do you judge her at the end of each month how she's doing? Hey, mum, no, you could do a bit better with this.
She'll still shout at me if I don't.
I played with David Beckham, and he would say, you know, I'm a football player, yeah, of course I'm a football player, but I'm also someone who wants to do more than just play football. He strikes me that you're a little bit like that as well. You're a lot like that, in fact. Was there a point whereby you ever felt overwhelmed by everything that was happening and you thought, oh, this is...
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Getting so big, I just need to sort of pull back a little bit here.
Not really, because we planned for, you know, four or five scenarios before everything started, because obviously we don't know what's going to happen, so we just thought worst case scenario, we planned for, you know, five or six different scenarios that could play out. So it was just about executing whichever one out of the six that we had to choose from. So yeah, most of the
work was... What are you referring to, six?
Just six scenarios, like... Whether, like the U-turn's one example, we didn't know that was going to happen, but we had to prepare in case it did happen. And then when it did happen, we didn't have to panic and, oh, let's do this for 3 or 4 months. And
so you felt relaxed then, did you, a little bit?
Yeah, it was...
That muff, you don't like muffs, do we?
It was... No, but I felt like it was important to do that because I didn't want it to... Obviously, when I started the planning, I was 7 months injured. When I actually started, I was 3 months shut down. So I couldn't do anything for 3 months. So I just thought, now's the time to start. I've got the time and willing to do it, so why not? So that's when we started it. And then I felt like it was a clever thing to do to get a team behind us that can manage day to day and make sure we have five or six different answers for whatever might come up. And, you know, luckily we had prepared for the one that did come up. And yeah, I'm thankful for that.
And are you the sort of person who knows exactly what it is you're going to do when you retire from football already? Or is it a case of you thinking, no, I'll just sort of cross that bridge when I come to it?
No, I definitely have options, but I've still got years left. I don't really need to.
You've got a long time left.
Hopefully I can play until, you know, 36, 37.
Do you think like a coach or do you think like someone who might go into business?
I won't do coaching straight away.
No.
I feel like football's so like... People don't understand how mentally, you know, challenging it is. It's not always about the physicality, but mentally, day to day, just the concentration that you have to put in, it can be draining. So I feel like when I do retire, I want to
come away from it
for a little bit. But coaching's definitely an option because I feel like the love for the game's never going to go away. So I'll still, you know, enjoy playing football and being involved in the sport. So it's definitely an option. But yeah, it's interesting to... I don't want to, like... plan it all out, really. I just want to have the options and then when we get there, see how it plays out.
How often would you speak to psychology? What sort of work would you do with you around moments like that?
When I look back, it's just like 6 or 7 months wasted. I wish I would have spoke to someone before the operation. Yeah.
Hi, everyone. I hope you're enjoying this episode. This is just a quick thank you to Skybet, our partners, for making this show happen. It's something I've wanted to do for a long, long time. Please subscribe. There's loads more episodes coming up, and I hope you're enjoying it. So this section is called Failure is a Bruise, Not a Tattoo. So it's when I went to Valencia and didn't do very well.
Yeah.
In fact, it was shambolic. What was your low point, that moment where you just feel like it hasn't been as bad as this and you've had to sort of dig in?
Probably the lowest point was the post-shoulder operation. I'd never had any serious injuries before, like where I required surgery or anything like that. It was tough mentally because I knew physically I was better, but I didn't have confidence in it.
Going to challenges and stuff.
And I felt like I was backing away, and obviously because I play on the left side, I roll a lot inside.
Yeah.
So I have to use that arm quite often and quite a lot. And I just didn't have the confidence within it. But
how did that come back? Just time and just working on
just
it?
Just time. It probably took until, you know, like the winter break in February, I think it was, we went to Dubai.
Yeah.
And then I felt a bit more confident after that.
Yeah.
But it did take like 6 or 7 months for me to feel like myself again. And then when I look back, it's just like 6 or 7 months wasted. I wish I would have spoke to someone before the operation. And he would have said, listen, you're going to feel this after, you're going to feel like this. You,
this could happen. But I didn't really, I had to get on with it because I didn't want to miss that much of the season. So I actually came, it recovered quite quickly, but just when I started playing.
Yeah, you just didn't feel right.
Yeah, I didn't feel 100%.
You said before as part of your team, you've got a psychologist.
Yeah.
How often would you speak to a psychologist and what sort of work would he do with you around moments like that?
Yeah, sometimes it's not genuinely about the football. It's just about dealing with setbacks. And we actually did some good work, but you can do good work off the pitch, but when you get on there...
You still feel that moment.
Yeah, sometimes you just... Something doesn't feel right.
Do you feel like you're at that point in your life now, 25, where you've had that sort of... You've come in, you've had that huge sort of lot of excitement, then you have that little bit of a dip, and then last season you were just flying. Do you feel like you've come through it and that now everything else in front of you feels like, you know, you are going to be a little more unbreakable almost in terms of... Because you've seen it all before.
Yeah, 100%. I just feel like I've experienced the biggest games and, you know, been in the most high-pressure situations. And, you know, I always think to myself, like, how can I help other players, like... Certain players have helped me, and I feel like now I'm actually in the right position and stuff to genuinely help them and, you know, help them in the beginning of their careers and, you know, try and set them off in the right direction the same way people like Wazza, Carras, Juan set me off in the right direction.
I was thinking last season watching you, it almost felt like, obviously, you know, you've got a lot of excellent players at United, but when you... Casemiro and Bruno Fernandes weren't playing as a three, it was a big problem that you were almost becoming the leaders in the team. I could put Lisandro Martins in that probably bracket as well. Do you feel like that now, like you've stepped up into that leadership pack? Like you're one of those players at the club that, you know, everyone looks up to, and if you're not playing, it's like, oh, we're missing him today.
Yeah, I think that does happen, but it's a blow when you lose any player really in the squad, because the squad is the strength. It's not just the 11 that's on the pitch. Remember a couple of players got injured against Reading in a cup game, and it's just it puts everyone down a little bit, because, you know, Donny was out for a long time after that, Christian was out for a little bit, and the game was already won when these injuries happen. And it's just like, it does, when you come in the next day to training and you see them on the treatment bed and you know how down they are, it's disheartening. So it's not just the players that, you know, are playing every week. It's the squad, really, and we have to try and keep that. I think Eric really concentrated on that when he came in, making everyone together as one. You know, it's impossible for everyone to play every game, but I think as a player, you have to accept and support when you're not playing. And when you are playing, you have to, you know, give everything and try and do what you can to help the team win the game.
In the league, there was a period where we weren't defending as well and we stopped scoring as many goals as we were scoring.
It was a moment, wasn't there, where he sort of, like, left you out. Did you agree with him on that point? So let's talk about Manchester United, and I think back to my start of my career and how fortunate I was to come into a stable environment where there was one manager, they'd just won the Premier League title, there were brilliant senior players, obviously they'd had success. And I think of where you came into, you know, you've had absolutely the opposite of that. You've had five managers, you've had different styles of play, a lot's been asked of you. How has that been? How hard has that been?
It's been a little bit tough, but I've enjoyed working under the different managers, because I feel like I've been able to take a little bit from each manager, and it's helped me mature, especially in the early stages. It's helped me mature quickly and helped my game develop a little bit more. So I think there's definitely stuff that I've taken from each manager that's helped shape my game to where it is now. And hopefully, you know, we do get that stability now, and we can go into definitely challenge and hopefully win the biggest trophies.
And then just talked about Erik ten Hag. Obviously, you've enjoyed last season. You had an absolutely incredible season, scoring all those goals. What was the biggest difference? What changed when he came in? Because he certainly had some big decisions to deal with as well along the way, and he was tough, wasn't he, with them?
No, 100%. But when he came in, I didn't hear him speak about getting in the top four once. He just wanted to win trophies. And, you know, if you've got that mentality... I've always been around people that have that mentality. So
he was telling you we're going to win trophies at this club.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what we're playing in, whether it's Europa League or Premier League, any of the cup trophies. He wanted to try and win everything. And listen, the players, we give it everything we could. We let ourselves down definitely in the Europa League, And I feel like in the league, it was a period where we weren't defending as well and we stopped scoring as many goals as we were scoring. So that's something that I'll definitely want to correct for.
Yeah, those big games, there's some big defeats, weren't there, in the sort of three or four games?
Yeah,
sort of like almost 100%,
but we'd always bounce back from them. Listen, it feels, there's no lower point when you go to rival teams and concede four, five, six goals. There's nothing worse than that. You have to try and find the positives in the game after. We always had a good performance and won.
How did you recover? Because you always did seem to recover from those defeats. What was his words, or what did you all do after those games?
We'd still do the game analysis.
You go back and watch it again, maybe. Even after like a 7-0 at Anfield, you go and watch it.
Maybe not watch it, but he'd watch it, definitely. And he'd dissect it to us in maybe a team meeting. Yeah, because sometimes as players, you definitely don't want to watch it. But I feel like his understanding of players is very high. And there's nothing worse than, I definitely don't want to watch it. I don't want to watch any games back because what's the point? There's nothing you can take from him. But the next game, it's important to clear your head because you can't let that dwell. Because we had some big fixtures, especially after the Liverpool game. We had Solskjaer at home, I think it was. And, you know, we had a really good performance. I think we won 4-1. But yeah, it's not easy to recover. But he'd always, throughout whatever time we had after a bad result, he'd give us confidence again and, you know, remind us sometimes that, listen, you wouldn't be here if you aren't good players. And I'm not one to need that all the time, but there is times after games like that, you know, just a reminder, like, listen, next game, you're gonna do it. And he always gave us that full confidence and support. But like I said, in the end, we fell short in the league. I was disappointed with how we finished the league because I felt like we could have, you know, put a bit more pressure on, you know, Arsenal and sitting in the end, it was, you know, 15 points, 20 points gap, so it's a little bit disappointing. But we managed to get a trophy over the line, which is always important, not only for the players, but for the fans. I mean, the culture of Man United, it's always been about winning trophies, and it's good to get back to that because it's been a few years since we have.
He quite obviously loves you. I mean, you've played for nearly every game this season, but there was a moment, wasn't there, where he sort of, like, left you out. Did you agree with him on that point? Was that...
No, 100%. I learned from pre-season. Like, a couple of the lads was a couple of minutes late in pre-season, and it was important for him to implement them rules there and then.
Because that's unusual for you. You would never be late, would you, in any situation?
No, listen, I wasn't even that much late, but...
Was he being harsh?
No, I don't think he was being harsh, because late's late at the end of the day, but it was probably about 45 seconds and a minute late. But I already knew what was going to happen because of the rules that he implemented in pre-season, so I'm not going to sit and argue about it, because we've got a game to try and win, and Wolves away for us in the last couple of years, it's not been an easy place to go, so... There's a time and a place when to speak to him about it, but if we go on and win the game, then nobody cares.
You came back from the World Cup, and it was a glorious watch seeing you play as well as you did. I think it was only Erling Haaland scored more goals after the World Cup. What changed after that World Cup? Because you just looked absolutely unstoppable. You really want to play for England, don't you?
Yeah, 100%.
Desperate to play.
It's a huge part of my career, and I feel like the team's very strong, and like we've got a good chance of winning stuff, and I'm, you know, obviously desperate to be a part of it. But when I come back from the World Cup, I feel like there is a mentality change, and I felt like I was, you know, up there with some of the best players in the world at that time.
You sit here today having scored 30 goals last season, and it was your best ever season. Do you feel like that's it now? You've hit that mark, and you feel like...
Yeah, there's no time to... I think before that, I'd always said, like, let's get to 20. I think 20 for a winger is a good benchmark. But, you know, this season I've hit 30, so we have to try and push it now and go above and beyond. But, yeah, I feel like I can definitely do it. I think towards the end of the season I was struggling with a few, you know, injuries, and I probably weren't quite at it. And that's when the goals started to you know, dry up a little bit. But if I can get that side of it, keep that under taps, and you know, I feel like I can definitely go and, you know, get 35 or 40.
Roy brought you into the England team back in 2016, which is 7 years ago. It's interesting because going back to my career, and I think of Wayne Rooney had a hard time with England at times, David Beckham had a hard time with England, my brother had a hard time with England. Manchester United players do sometimes suffer quite a bit with sort of criticism. Yeah. And you obviously got that, you know, you were racially abused after the Euro 2020. Did it take away any of your love for playing for England? Just the fact that obviously it was just a football action. It was something that happens obviously time and time again.
I think maybe a little bit. but not for a, it wasn't for a long period of time. I mentioned, like, with my shoulders a little bit down for a couple of months, and yeah, that's probably when it was playing on my mind a little bit. But I'm not one to dwell on situations. I just want to be positive about it and move forward, because like I said to you before, I feel like I have 100% faith in the England setup, and I feel like if we get little things right, we can compete with the best teams in the world, as we've already shown. But there's still another step for us to take, and I do believe that we can take it. I feel like the squad, everyone's at good ages. We've got a big opportunity that I don't want to throw it away because of what's happened in the past.
How important is it for you at the end of this season that you're starting for England in a major tournament?
Yeah, massively. I feel like, you know, there's been times in between major tournaments where I've started for, you know, 18 months. Then it comes to the tournament and then
You've been out.
Yeah, I'm not starting or I'm like in and out of the team. So it's definitely important for me as a player to try and, you know, get that spot nailed down and try and bring my qualities to the team, because I feel like we've got many good players and there's a time for every player, but I've still not had my, you know, proper opportunity in major tournaments yet.
And it's clear your future long-term is going to be at Manchester United, you know, what you've spoken to me about today. How excited are you about that? And will we see you lift that? Want to see you lift that Premier League trophy soon?
I hope so. That's been my dream ever since I was a kid. You know, I watched, you know, your guys in your team win it so many times. It almost became natural for us to see us win it. We forgot about the hard work that he's put into every game, and we almost expected just to be lifting a trophy come the end of the season, and it'll be unbelievable for me to get my hands on that trophy with United. So, you know, hopefully we manage to do that.
And break Wayne Rooney's record?
Hopefully, yeah.
You're not far away, I mean, you're halfway there and you've played a mountain of games already, haven't you?
Yeah. You never know what's going to happen, but, you know, I'm all about, you know, scoring goals and trying to make assists, so, you know, there's definitely a chance that it can happen, and I've actually spoken to Wazza about it, and, you know,
you're coming for him.
No, he wants me to do it.
They always say that, strikers. Man, he is a bit different.
Yeah, he said it would be good for me to do it because, you know, I've grew up at the club and stuff like that, but, you know, hopefully I get the opportunity to try and make that happen.
But all the talk, I mean, you're talking about staying at the club, you're talking about breaking the record, but was there a point a couple of years ago where you had that little doubt that you thought, do I believe in this anymore? Is there a moment where I might just have to go and sort of maybe play elsewhere? I thought that might have happened. Obviously, I'd not asked you at the time, and I'm only speaking to you now for the first time about it.
No, I feel like all players probably go through that stage, whether they've been at their boyhood club for, you know, 10 years or 12 years, I think. You know, when you think about it deeply, there's nothing better than winning at Man United. So I feel like at the age I'm at, I've still got a big opportunity to try and do that, and the timing, just I feel like we're closer than what we think, but we still need to take them extra steps, and at the minute we've got a manager that's fully dedicated to just winning at all costs, and he wants us to be as best as we can be individually, as best as we can be as a team, and at the end of the day he wants us to win trophies. And there's been some games where I've come in fuming at half time because we're not playing well, but he just says, listen, like, relax. He knows we're not playing well, but we're still in the game and we're going to fight to win the game. It doesn't matter if we win 1-0 or 3-0 in the second half. But if we get that one goal, just be ready for that one chance. And it's like a refocus. So it's important that, you know, I keep that in mind to the point where he doesn't have to keep reminding me. You know, it just happens naturally.
Do you feel like he's got something different, Erik ten Hag, than the previous four managers that you've worked under, that he can make that final step and get over the line and win a Premier League title?
You know, I feel like he has. The only time's gonna tell, but I feel like he's got the players 100%. So we're gonna give 100% for him, for the badge, and for the fans. So we should always, you know, give 110% in every game, no matter which opponent you're playing against. And doing that when you're the one that's, you know, trying to give 100% all the time.
Brilliant, Marcus. Yeah. Great to speak to you today. Thank you so much, and good luck with the season. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.